Hi, everyone, and welcome to Talent Talks. I'm your host, Rob Adams, and today I have the privilege of speaking with one of the foremost experts on organizational culture, leadership, and talent strategy, John O. Burdett. John is the founder of Orchestra, co-founder of Verity International, and leadership advisor to Transsearch International. He has worked as a consultant in more than 40 countries, advising some of the world's largest organizations on culture, leadership, and executive development. With a doctorate in management development, numerous teaching excellence awards, and 12 best-selling books under his belt, John has profoundly shaped the way we think about leadership and culture in organizations today. In our conversation, we'll explore the fundamental role that culture plays in shaping organizations, the challenges businesses face in managing it, and how leaders can cultivate a strong, performance-driven culture. John, welcome to the show, and you've already educated me off the air before we started, so I'm grateful for the time and I look forward to what I'm going to learn here today.
Thanks very much.
It's my
by the way, it was a wonderful introduction. You should come with me everywhere, but much of what I know on culture is not as a consultant. I spent 30 years as a chief human resource executive, and that's where you really learn about culture within the organization.
Absolutely true. And so we're going to dive right in because we've got great questions lined up here today. And there are complexities to organizational culture, why it matters, and how leaders can harness it to drive success. And so my very first question is, what is culture?
Let me start with a provocative response. Culture doesn't exist.
Really?
If you're a social anthropologist, you would say that culture is a myth. It only exists in people's minds for as long as they want it to exist. It's a way to create meaning for the world around them. A social anthropologist will talk about the organization in similar terms. So starting with a provocative statement that culture doesn't exist. By the way, it's a very interesting response that it's a myth.
It certainly is.
Second way I'd respond to what is culture is, you know, it's the old adage, how do things happen around here? Which is pretty good, except it misses a culture piece of the puzzle. We don't just want to know about today's culture. Perhaps more important is the culture we need, not want, tomorrow. Thirdly, we go back to the 1980s to Edgar Schein, and culture exists on different levels. It exists as an artifacts, the things you can see and occasionally touch. It's about values and it's about underlying assumptions. And if you've been on an MBA recently, I assure you they probably talked about culture using Schein's different levels of hierarchy, usually expressed as an iceberg. My experience doesn't support that proposition. My first real job was in industrial relations in the UK, in the auto industry, and I looked after 15,000 employees and 30 unions and wildcats and all the rest of it. And I can assure you that the underlying assumptions were not hidden. They were way right in front of you on the table. And I would express that assumption in this way. If it's good for the company, it's probably not very good for the membership of the union. Finally, this is my way to express culture. It's a system. It's a system that needs to be managed from the outside in. You can lead it from the inside out, but it has to be managed from the outside in. This leads you to two further thoughts. One, culture is only as strong as its weakest point. A system is only as strong as its weakest point. Secondly, you've got to think about culture holistically. You can't deal with different pieces of it independently. Like a system, a clock is a mechanical system. If you leave a piece out, it doesn't work. And so the notion that somebody from the outside comes in and helps you redefine the values is actually pretty dangerous. Mm. It can have all sorts of long-term impact, which isn't very helpful. So you have to think about culture as a system. And the system only is as strong as its weakest part. But you have to think about it holistically And when you can't work on everything at once, but you have to take in mind what is the rest of the system as you're working on any one piece.
And thus, the research suggests that only one company in five manages its culture. Why is that?
Actually, we've just done a research study in Transurch. We talked to and got response from 174 companies on a pretty in-depth research piece. And this keeps showing up. Only about one company in five manages its culture. Now, let me explain why. Not too long ago, I did a session with 130 CEOs. And I asked them a question. How important is culture to your organization? Now, the answer by and large was a 9 or a 10. So they all nod sagely, 9 or a 10. So I asked them a second question. On the same scale, 1 to 10, think about how much time you spent on strategy last year and give that a 10. Now, how much time did you spend on culture last year? It was a 2 or 3. It is not that people, managers, organizations, leaders don't think culture is important. It's simply they don't know how to have the culture conversation. Secondly, they get trapped into thinking that issues like the engagement survey is a measure of culture. It measures at best about 16% of the elements you need to embrace in culture.
Is there a proven relationship between culture and performance? And how do you measure culture?
Let's get back to the first relationship between culture and performance. There are two seminal studies that anybody's involved in culture will know about. If they don't, they should know. The first goes back to the 1990s, 1992, Hesketh and Cotter at Harvard. And they started out with an assumption. This is how dangerous assumptions can be. Their assumption was there's going to be a strong relationship between a strong culture and results. They got halfway through the study and found out there were a lot of companies that had a strong culture that didn't have very good results. And they'd missed a piece. And it was agility. There is a strong relationship between a strong and agile culture, which I call stragility, and performance. And one of our outcomes was that with a strong and agile culture, organizations realized 12 times the stock price growth of organizations that lacked that discipline. 12 times the stock price growth. That's pretty impressive. Mm. Coming to 2019, there was a study by McKinsey, and they looked at a whole lot of different cultures. It's actually a wonderful study. And they found that if you manage and measure all of the elements that shape culture, you're going to be double the odds that your strategies will be executed, but over the long term, deliver triple the total return to shareholders that other companies deliver. So triple the return to shareholders as a result of managing and measuring all of the elements of culture. Hmm. Now, how do you measure culture? We have several measures of culture. One of the things we discovered is if you're going to measure culture, you have to have a different mechanism, a different process working with the board than you do with management. Secondly, the measurement needs to be in business terms, ideally from what we are to what we need to be. Now, I'll add a rider. If that assessment, that measurement, looks like it belongs in the third year class of a psychology degree, it belongs in the third year of a psychology degree. So you have to find different measures for different populations. You might even want a different measure for middle management. Thirdly, it's not enough to manage what's happening inside the organization. You have to address what's happening in the capital markets. What are key stakeholders? What do they believe about the culture? And also, spend some time with customers. What do they think about your culture? When I've worked with major organizations, I go out and talk to customers and we take a video of the conversation. Then we get senior managers in a room. They're absolutely amazed at what the customers talk about their organization. And we bring people over to the capital markets who will talk about the organization, not just their results, but how they're perceived, how their culture is perceived. So I call that a 360 review of culture. Not enough just to look inside the organization. It's not enough to just have one measure. You've got to take a 360 view and then pull them together and define where we are and where we need to be. By the way, the most insightful group, middle managers.
Really?
Yes. And I'll tell you something else. When you do the engagement survey, the group that is most disenfranchised are middle managers. If you don't get middle managers on board, you're in trouble. You're not going to get very far. And one of the ways to get them on board is to ask them, what do you think about the culture and what do you think it should be? So I'll leave it with, you need a 360 review of culture. And it's not just looking inside, it's asking other key stakeholders.
Let's cycle back to something you said a little earlier, that you describe culture as a system. Can you say more about that, please?
Yes, this is my favorite piece of work because it's been the most helpful. First of all, you have to manage culture from the outside in. How important is that? Ask Kodak, ask Nokia, ask General Electric, ask companies that have tried to manage culture from the inside out and they fail. Kodak's a classic example. They had 80,000 employees at one stage. They had 80% of the photocopy film market. And guess what came along? The digital photography. Who invented digital photography? Kodak. Same with the Swiss watch industry. You know, the digital watch, they invented it. Now they have recovered somewhat, but they're never where they were before digital watch came out. So you've got to manage culture from the outside in. And that means the emerging customers' needs, what's happening socially, economically, politically. In particular, as I mentioned, the customer. What does tomorrow's customers want to buy and how do they want to buy it? So you've got to form that understanding of the context. Secondly, culture is built on four key pillars: purpose, diversity, brand, and speed. And you got those four right. Purpose, why do we do what we do? Diversity. I mean, the rule on diversity, the 25% rule, if you have a board of directors with 25% of women on it and a board of directors only men, the board with 25% of women on it, it will be more successful. Brand, that is, brand equals really better results and no disappointment. But the key is employees in the organization have to buy into the brand promise. And speed? Speed is the ultimate way to compete. The only truly competitive advantage is how quickly people in the organization learn. Within that, there are three cultural drivers. There might be four. One is your strategy. Two is what you measure and what you reward. Three is the talent management system. And if you are a tech company, technology is a driver. Pulling these together, using a term from the steel industry, giving it extra tensile strength, are your values. Your values bring those driving elements together. Now, the next step is, an organization is pretty good at the next step, is what makes culture happen on a day-to-day basis. And you get things like structure, design, process, how people learn, candor, psychological safety, and freedom to act. Now, organizations work on all those things. What they don't work on is what holds them back. Myth, symbolism, learning, story. And those, if you don't change those, if you don't address those, if you don't change the mindset, you're stuck. You can do everything else. But if you don't address the things that hold you back, new stories, new metaphors, new ways to think about what's possible and what's important. Now, I'm sorry if this is a long explanation, but it's a system. Sitting inside that are two value propositions, and your culture supports two value propositions. Why work here and why buy from us? And the more important is why work here? All that is driven by and brought together by leadership, inspirational leadership, and inspire comes from the Latin spiritus, which means to breathe life into. To lead is to breathe life into the culture you need every day in every way. I apologize that that's a complex response, and I have a lot of CEOs talk to me. There's a lot of stuff there, John. Okay, what do you want me to leave out? Forget structure, forget language, forget symbolism, forget metaphor, forget technology, forget our purpose, how we measure things. No, it's a system. Now, you can't work on everything at once. So I refer to the family photograph. You know, you want mom and dad in the middle of the picture, perfectly focused. But you also want to capture the rest of the family in the photograph, also somewhat focused. And so working on the system is about what are you going to focus on, because you can't do everything at once. But in addition to that, what are you going to bring into the picture? Because here's the issue. If you leave something out, it won't work. If you try and introduce parts of, change parts of the system, parts of culture, without recognizing how it impacts everything else, you're in trouble. So again, I apologize for that being a complex response, but it's a system. And that has been my guideline. That's been my bellwether. That's been the guts of how I describe and talk about culture. Not always at the same time and not all at once, but you pull them together. You recognize it's the source of new questions.
It's a system. It has to be detailed. You can't leave anything out. So I completely support what you're saying, and I appreciate the detailed answer. Hire with tomorrow's culture in mind makes perfect sense. That being said, how do you do that?
Well, at Transearch, we have and we believe there are six elements of fit. First of all, if you don't attract talent, you can't hire talent. So the first step is to work with an organization to help them refine, redefine, enrich their hiring value proposition. Now, that can't be hype. That has to be real stuff based on research and conversation within the company. You can't hire people you don't attract. Second thing is culture. What is the culture we have and what is the culture we need? And that means measurement. You can't manage what you don't measure. Thirdly, it's about a scorecard. What are the results? What are the outcomes long term? What is expected in this role? What does success look like in the short term and longer term? And then it's leadership competences. And we believe having a simple list of leadership competences is inadequate. One of the reasons, if you have a simple list and you're working with an executive and you ask them, tell me about the leadership competence, by the way, it should be role specific. If you're not careful, they end up giving you a list of qualities which are very reflective of themselves. I'm great in this role. I need somebody like me. So we've built our library of leadership competence around a leadership model, which we call leadership balance, which is about the head, direction, the hand, delivery, the heart, development, and the spirit, which is the day-to-day dialogue. And we feel we're very strongly on this notion of leadership balance. The next piece of the puzzle is the team. Right now, the research is that when people stumble in moving into a new job, the major reason they stumble is lack of fit with the culture. As we create the 21st century organization, which is flatter, which is a team of teams, the critical issue, I think, is going to be the team. And the final piece of the six elements I talk about in how do you hire and make culture a major building block of the hiring process is integration. If they don't land, they won't stay. Six elements, that are really important in terms of determining fit. Probably the most important one is culture, because we're looking at not only what happens today, but the sort of culture we need tomorrow. That helps spawn thinking around the scorecard, and it is the basis for role-specific leadership competencies, which are always strategic. If you're only replacing somebody, it's a mandate for mediocrity.
You make the point that power moves into a vacuum. Why is that important?
Look, if only one company in five measures its culture, there's a power vacuum. And guess what? If you're not managing your culture, somebody else is. Let me repeat that, because it's so important.
Yes.
If you're not managing your culture, somebody else is. So who's going to move into that power vacuum? Perhaps it's a disenfranchised middle management. You know, I've been forced to look at change for so long that change now only becomes more work. Perhaps it's a group of senior executives who don't want to change things. Perhaps they're coming up to the last stage of their career. Why do they want to blow everything up and start again? Perhaps it's a customer or a client who's very aggressive, who's predatory. And I won't mention customers, but there's some customers out there are so demanding that by and large, if you don't reject their overtures, they'll end up managing your culture. What about private equity firm that wants to buy the business for short-term results? They will quickly absorb and overtake the culture. If you're not managing your culture, somebody else is. Power moves into a vacuum.
Culture eats strategy for breakfast. I love that quote. It's a common quote. What does that actually mean?
Well, I did a little while ago, I did a session. I do some sessions for boards of directors. I did a session for the Institute of Directors. Beautiful place. It was an art gallery. It was beautiful. And so I'm talking about culture, and I actually was talking about the culture as a system. And I always get this comment from somewhere in the wings, culture eats strategy for breakfast. It's fun, it's provocative, it's interesting, it's memorable, but it's wrong. And it's been wrong since 2004 when Drucker came up with it. If you don't have a strategy, you're lost. You need a strategy and culture. Now, what comes first? If you go on a three-day retreat to look at strategy, make sure the first day is spent on culture. See, university teaching, business school teaching, for many years was this. You create your strategy, and then you build a culture that will support your strategy. Seems logical. But in a world like we have today, the only thing I can tell you about your strategy is it's a work in progress. I mean, who could have forecast all these tariffs? And I probably should say no more about the tariffs.
Fair enough.
But you've got to create not a strategy, but a series of strategic scenarios, any one of which could unfold based on a future that's very difficult to analyze. So how do we fit culture into that? We need to create a culture, and this goes back to the Harvard study, that's agile enough such that any of those scenarios can unfold. Now, the other part of the puzzle is, if strategy and culture clash, there's only one winner, and it ain't strategy. So using a sort of a reference from elsewhere, you've got to get strategy and culture on the same bus, but with culture in the front seat.
How do you deal with the reality that a typical organization has more than one culture?
Well, very good. Leaders are very good at asking great questions. In fact, if you ask me what's the major characteristic of a great leader, they're great at listening, but they ask great questions. in a seminar or workshop, a great question is one formed as a paradox. How can you be one company, one culture, but lots of different cultures at the same time? It's a paradox. Now, I respond to the paradox often by using African drummers. And so I'll bring in a group of 10 or 12 African drummers, sometimes getting people in the room to use African drums as well. And they listen to the drummers, and each of the drummers often have their own rhythm, perhaps different tone in the rhythm. But what keeps the whole thing together? What brings the whole thing together? What makes it one is the bass drum. Bang, 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 bang. It's more melodic than I just suggested. But here's the challenge. How do we have different cultures? Because an organization's going to have different cultures. But how do we at the same time have one culture? It's the bass drum. What is the bass drum in an organization? It's your values. It's your beliefs around diversity. It's your common purpose. It's a way to think about technology. It differs from different organizations to organization, but it's an interesting paradox that companies have lots of cultures. Now we're talking about one culture and many cultures at the same time. The break to the paradox is the bass drum. What is your organizational bass drum? And you got to be consistent. It's got to be clear. It's got to be unambiguous. And it's got to sound every day across the organization. And if people don't listen to the bass drum, you got to find another home for them. Hopefully the competition.
Can you say something about organization design? Is that possible?
Well, I'll go back to 1913. 1913 was a period of discontinuous change. And once a century, there's a period of discontinuous change. 1913 was Ford, the assembly line. In 1911, I think Ford built 799 cars. In 2013, he built 177,000, and 2 years later, he built 488,000. At one point, they were building thousands of cars every month. I mean, it was technology in its own way that changed everything. We're looking at AI as being a similar shift in technology. Discontinuous change. What was no longer is, and what will be totally overwhelms what was. Now, it's quite interesting. It wasn't until 1931 that General Motors introduced the M-type organization. There is generally a lag between technology and organization design. So what I can tell you about the organization of the future, without a lot of doubt, is going to be flat, focused, fast. It's going to be fertile to new ideas, and it's going to be forged from the outside in. It will be a team of teams. It will have two or three levels at most. And each of these teams will be somewhat self-standing and self-organizing. At the center will be an AI hub. And the AI hub will be monitoring the performance of each of the businesses, will be a platform for collaboration, will be a repository for stories and best practice, and indeed, collaboration and collaborative ideas, and it will be continuously into the marketplace, filtering in meaningful information that will change how the business is managed.
What role does informal organization play?
Well, it's very interesting. When people talk about culture, they talk about almost always think about the formal organization. Two organizations, the formal organization and the informal organization. The only day the formal organization is more important is February the 29th in the afternoon. The informal organization is what you got to get your arms around. If you don't have the connection to, if you don't have the right relationship, if you're not managing the informal organization, you're dead. So how do you manage the informal organization? Simply, it's about trust. And let me just spell out the word trust. Trust is the ability, the T is the ability to build rapport. You got to get out of your office. You got to go and talk to people in the informal organization, informal breakfasts, whatever it takes. And it's got to be, to the extent possible, eyeball to eyeball. The R is respect. You got to respect people in the informal organization, although they may only do manual jobs. You know, there is a tendency with people who come through an elite educational system to look down on people within the informal organization, a machinist or a material handler. They make your organization work. You've got to give them great respect. The U is understanding where the informal organization is coming from. What their concerns are, what their complaints are. Why do they stay? Why do they quit? The S is shared values, but I'll expand shared values to really it's the bass drum. Do people buy into the bass drum? And T, and this is the most important, the commitment. When you make a promise, to deliver on the promise. So in... it's very easy to think about culture as being the formal organization. Look, it's quite interesting. If you wanted the formal organization to collapse, assume that the informal organization doesn't enable it. Without the enabling power of the informal organization, the formal organization wouldn't last a week.
TransSearch weaves the concept of leadership balance into much of what they do. What is leadership balance?
Well, I mentioned it earlier, but we have a strong belief that successful leaders today bring a sense of balance. It's about the head direction, which is cognitive intelligence. It's about the hand, which is delivery, which is about practical intelligence. It's about the heart, which is interpersonal intelligence, developing people, developing the team. And it's about the spirit, which is intrapersonal intelligence, knowing yourself. It's about the day-to-day dialogue. And if you don't put the leadership competences or even analysis of performance through those four elements, what you end up with is a measurement or a review or an assessment that's basically an overly emphasized assessment based on the characteristics of the person doing the assessment. So when you're asking a leader on a search, tell me about the leadership competences. If you don't create this framework, this balance, the competences end up looking just like them. It's a way to think about what leadership is in the 21st century. And don't forget, as we flatten the organization, as we have this AI hub, this leadership balance becomes absolutely essential. It's funny, I coach a number of CEOs. I've been talking about leadership balance for the longest time, and they nod and sagely say, yeah, great. And then we had COVID. You know what they all said to me? Now I understand what leadership balance is all about. Because in COVID, the heart and the spirit became the name of the game. Reaching out to people, the day-to-day dialogue, still developing people, although the nature of the work was different and work from home. And all of them, without exception, said to me, John, now I got it. The framework, the cornerstone of our work on leadership is leadership balance.
There is a case to be made that culture is mindset. Can you change mindset?
Well, if you can't, you're in trouble. So amongst the things that organizations don't really work on is mindset. Mindset is about the stories you share, about the metaphors you use, about the symbolism you engage, about what you reinforce and capture doing right. It's about reaching out and finding best practice elsewhere. I'll give you an example of changing mindset. I used to work for a company, and one of the businesses was a printing company. They had a lot of other businesses. And I won't mention his name, but in the printing companies, they had a guru who was one of the world's top experts on printing. And the boss recognized and thought the presses could be run differently and faster. And this individual scotched it. And as a result, everybody in the organization was stuck with presses running at this level. Now, the boss happened to go to a trade show in Stuttgart. And over a coffee, he met an executive CEO who was running a business in northern Italy. And they got talking. And he was running his business exactly the way the boss wanted it to be run. And his presses were running way faster than ours. He bought the business in northern Italy. And the first thing he did, he sent this guru to Italy for a month to learn how to run the presses differently. It totally changed the business. He was working not on productivity, he was working on mindset. And this individual who was the expert was in fact the thumb in the dike that stopped the water flowing through. So it's about metaphor, symbolism, language. We do have a measurement of mindset. Where are we? Where do we need to be? But it's about a lot of subtle things. And one of the things that's really important is you can't change culture unless somewhere, some of the time, it's happening already inside the organization. So part of how you change mindset is to catch people doing it right.
This has been an absolutely fascinating conversation, and your insights into culture, leadership, and the future of organizations, they're invaluable. I thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and good luck.
That was John O. Burdett, founder of Orchestra, co-founder of Verity International, and leadership advisor to Transsearch International. And to our audience, if you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to Talent Talks for more discussions on leadership, culture, and talent strategy. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Rob Adams. We'll see you next time.